Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is your host, Glenn Greenwich. This is the Wealth Club, and this is the part of the International Black Summit Network. And tonight we've got two panelists from Brooklyn and from Queens that are going to be talking about the residential real estate markets. Emily James from REMAX, and we're going to have Clara Lines Devon from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. But before I bring them on, I'm going to read the Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. All over the world, March 24th, 2009. Moment of silence, please. Thank you. And now I'd like to bring to you live our two guests, Clara Lines and Emily James. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening, good evening. So I'm going to actually ask you to introduce yourself. So I'll start with you, Clara.
Glenn, I'm actually getting a lot of background noise. I don't know if we need the lines that aren't speaking.
I'm having a hard time hearing you. Okay.
Okay. I think that Emily was on her way in, so she's actually traveling in. So, Clara, if you would introduce yourself, let people know what company you work with and how long you've been in real estate, please.
That's great. My name is Clara Lyons. My name is Clara Lyons Devon. I am an agent with Weikert Realtors in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, which is in South Jersey, and I have been doing residential, commercial, investment, and rental real estate for 9 years.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. And Emily, what about yourself?
My name is Emily James. I am broker owner of Fremont Jaguar Real Estate, located in the Canarsie, Brooklyn section. I've been doing real estate for 5 years.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both for being on the show. So one of the things that I wanted, one of the reasons I brought you to the show today is for us to talk a little bit about residential real estate. For most people, that's usually one of the biggest assets that they have. But a lot of people, I don't believe, understand the use and the power of a real estate agent. So what would you say are some of the benefits of having a real estate agent working with you? And let's start from the side of a buyer. Clara?
I think number one is experience and knowledge of the market. So as an agent, we have access to information about properties that are for sale that a buyer may not necessarily have. Even if they're searching online, we have more detailed information about the property, what's available in their price range. We also have a knowledge of the full process, and a lot of buyers, especially when they're initially entering the market, don't have the full picture, you know. of all of the different vendors and people that you'll interact with in the transaction from beginning to end and what you need to do. So we essentially provide the service of educating the client about what the process is from start to finish.
Okay, very good. Emily, anything you'd like to add to that?
In terms of working with buyers, what I've found, a lot of buyers, they actually put the cart before the horse. So buyers need to, you know, understand that the first person you need to sit with is a real estate agent so that they can explain the process to you. Because most of the times, you know, you don't want to waste their time and you also don't want to waste your time. So
sure.
Getting an understanding of the process from the beginning stages will, you know, help us from wasting time and wasting the buyer's time.
Very good. Excellent. Okay. And so is that part of the what you would call the qualifying steps?
Yeah. And I offer this service to buyers free of charge, where I do a buyer consultation with them.
Exactly.
And give them the steps in terms of, you know, purchasing a home. So I'd rather sit down with them for 30 minutes or hour and go through that process with them, you know, versus going out for 2 hours, 3 hours, and then realizing that they're not even qualified to purchase a home.
Okay, okay. Very good. And at what point do you bring in the mortgage numbers? Do you look at the mortgage? You look at the numbers as part of that qualification?
For me, it actually is part of the buyer consultation. Some buyers are prepared, and they may come already with a qualification letter from a lender. Other buyers are not as well prepared. And as well, just like Emily, I also do a buyer consultation. And with that consultation, I'll have them bring in, 2 months of pay stubs, their W-2 forms if they're not, you know, self-employed, and information about, you know, their debt, to bring copies of that to give to, our in-house lenders so that they can qualify them as part of the process. Another part of the process in terms of that consultation is really an understanding of the market, because I think a lot of people are misinformed. You know, if you look at 1970 and in the 80s all the way up to the 90s, these are the lowest interest rates that we have had in the last 10 years. And what that means for buyers is that they can purchase more home than they could have, say, 10 years ago. They would qualify for more money. And so I really allow them to look at the trends to let them know this is still a really great time for them to purchase a home. Go over some of the tax credit information which they may not be aware of that's available for them as a first-time home buyer or as a, you know, different loan products or products that are available to them as a continuing buyer. And then, you know, after kind of the whole education process, then hand them over to the qualification to a lender to get them qualified for the financing portion. But there's a whole education piece that I think is really important that buyers should go through before we even get to, you know, how much they would qualify for.
Now, let me ask you this, because one of the things that seems to come the buyers bump up against is that some buyers come in with an expectation that they're able to buy more house than not. Is that typically the case, sometimes the case, or not at all? Emily?
Yeah, well, when they don't clearly understand, but most times I get them to understand real quick when I say to them, you know, what is your down payment and what is your closing? Do you have X amount of dollars to put as a down payment and as a closing? Because based on what you have, it's going to determine the value of the home that we're going to actually be looking at. You know, so they get the message really fast in terms of down payment and closing. Because with all of the predatory lending that took place, I was one of the real estate brokers that was very realistic with you and would let you know if you can qualify or not. You know, so the reality of it is if you can qualify for this home, then this is the price here in terms of your down payment
and you're closing. So I got the message across to them really fast.
So for my listeners, I would recommend to them to make sure that they've got some sense of or at least have their down payment together and understanding of where they're going to get their closing costs from before they actually sit down with a realtor. Would that be a good recommendation?
Yeah, that would be an excellent recommendation. And there's actually a third area that sometimes buyers are not aware of, and it's the money that they need to get started. So that money would consist of an initial deposit, the fee for the appraiser, which depending on the value of the home can start at $450, the cost of the inspection.
Yeah.
You know, and that varies with, you know, the cost of, you know, the home, the type of home more so than, you know, single family homes versus a duplex versus apartment building. The inspector charges a different dollar amount. That's money that they have to have just to do the transaction. And then on top of that, they need their deposit money, which goes towards the purchase of the house. And as Emily said, the closing cost, which comes at settlement, you know, at the end, which is, you know, basically the fees for the lender, taxes, insurance, all of those types of things. So there's kind of three pots of money. And if a person doesn't have that initial investment of out-of-pocket costs at our initial consultation, then, you know, I advise them to go back, work on getting that amount of money, you know, because we can't even do the transaction without that because the deposit has to go with the offer or with the contract, I should say.
Good. So you said appraisal, that there would be other different kinds of fees. Would the house inspection be part of that money as well?
Exactly, the initial deposit, which is a good faith deposit to the seller, and that can be applied towards their closing costs. The money for the appraisal, the money for the home inspection or any other inspection that they would want to do on the property, all of those are upfront costs,
or what I call
out-of-pocket costs. Mm-hmm.
And you would highly recommend that a prospective home buyer would do an inspection, be it termite, structural, make sure there's no leakage and so on and so forth, right?
Most definitely.
Yes, highly recommend it. If you're going to invest in a home that's $500,000, why not spend $400 to get an inspection? I mean, this is one of the biggest investments you would have probably ever make in your lifetime, owning a home. You know, why wouldn't you want to get an inspection? You know?
Now, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but also that inspection would be now used for leverage in case of negotiating the price at the back end if some things got discovered, correct?
That's correct.
Nope. Also repairs, because with an inspection, it kind of gives you an idea of what you're going to come out of the pocket, because you might meet a seller that you might really like that house, and that seller might mean really not want to negotiate with you much on the price. You know, it might be a house that they say is in as-is condition. So with an inspection,
okay,
you will have an idea if you need to do plumbing, electrical, whatever defects there is with the house.
Excellent.
And,
okay.
Emily brings up a really good point, which are as-is sales, and we're seeing more as-is sales in this particular market. And even though it's as is, doesn't necessarily mean that the buyer shouldn't do an inspection. You know, you really want to know, as Emily said, what it is you're purchasing. So you have, you know, all of the information up front to make a decision about whether this is the right property for you. And you can always make requests of the seller. You know, that even when it says as is, you can still make requests of the seller, and they can always tell you no, but you can still make that request, and you know, for repairs or, as you said, Glenn, for a concession on the price.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Let's move. Well, let me ask you this: is there anything else that as an agent for a buyer that you would be focusing on? Because we've talked about most of the things that you would focus on for a buyer, as a buyer's agent. Is there anything else that you can think of that might our listeners might be want to make sure that they have on the little checklist?
I think one of the things that is really important in looking at a, you know, buyer's agent is, you know, knowing that we are going to be with them through the entire process. So from we're kind of the liaison of keeping all of the resources together. And I think one of the things that buyers don't realize is that they're hiring out a lot of services that are kind of managed by the real estate agent. So, you know, one is ourselves, you know, Emily and I as agents, you know, who find them the property. The other is the, you know, the lender. We have relationships with lender and we'll make recommendations. But the choice of, you know, who they work with for their lender is ultimately the choice of the buyer. But we manage that process, the home inspection process. You know, the buyer is, in fact, you know, purchasing the services of the home inspector, which is why it's an upfront cost. But, again, we're managing that process. The negotiation with the seller, you know, we're the intercessor between the buyer and the seller in all of the negotiations. So, you know, the buyer doesn't have to interact with the other agent or the seller until, you know, we get to settlement. So all of that, all of the requests that are made on behalf of the buyer, we negotiate all of those things during the contract all the way up through the settlement. The relationship with the title company, the buyer is actually employing a title agency to make sure that there are no liens against the property, to make sure that it's free and clear, you know, that they have clear title so that when they purchase it, they're not getting any hidden loans against the property and they're, you know, there's no one else who has claim to the property to own it besides them once settlement is complete. And again, we coordinate that process for the buyer as well. So even though the buyer is paying for all of these services, the realtor is kind of the umbrella to make sure that all of those things happen seamlessly.
Wow, so the process is very complex, and so for our listeners, you really need to be able to manage that, and you want someone with experience that can manage it effectively and understands what the next steps are. So that would be some of the value that an agent would be providing.
Excellent.
Exactly. Okay. What I would like to say to buyers is. At the table, the buyer is the one that brings the money to the table. If you're going to be bringing the money to the table, why not have someone work with you along the process? You're paying for it anyway. So it doesn't make sense not to work with a real estate agent. It makes more sense to work with a real estate agent because these are the services that you are paying for as a buyer.
Okay.
Exactly. And I guess the last point that I want to make, it really saves the buyer time. So, you know, a lot of times buyers go to this person to find out the same information they can get from their agent. All of the information that they're searching, we have access to everything.
Gotcha.
So the clearer the buyer is about what it is they're looking for, all of that information we can provide them, and they only have to go to one person.
Excellent. Okay, great. So let's flip the script a little bit. And now you're an agent for the seller. So explain a little bit about that process for me. You can start out, Emily.
Agent for the seller. As an agent for the seller, my role is to get you the highest price for your property.
Okay.
When I'm working on the seller side, that's my goal. You know, in the least amount of time, with the least amount of hassle. And to get your property sold. That's when I work with a seller, that's my job, to get the property sold.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
I would
ditto that. And the other thing that both buyers and sellers don't realize is the amount of resources that we as agents put in to, you know, into the marketing of the property. So all of the ads, you know, in newspapers, all of the internet advertising, there's something that I do, you know, where I develop a property website for that particular property, you know, to advertise that, you know, the signage, you know, the open houses, all of the things that we do for the seller are upfront out-of-pocket costs. And as agents, we don't recoup any of that money unless the property sells. So if the let's take a for sale by owner person, the advantage of, you know, us over for sale by owner is that, you know, we do a lot of that marketing, advertising on behalf of the seller. Plus, we have a much broader market share or a much broader audience of people in terms of realtors. We have access to all of the realtors, you know, in the area and outside of the area. You know, we have all of, you know, over 100,000 hits per day on our websites, you know, people who are coming to look at information. We have a much broader context of reaching people than an individual seller would have on their own. You were going to say something, Emily?
No, I was just going to say, in terms of the sellers, one thing that we need to get them to understand is they don't need to have 5 real estate agents. All you need is one agent that you feel comfortable with, that you believe that you can have a work relationship with, because it's actually a work relationship. They're hiring us to sell their property. So once we're hired and they feel comfortable hiring us, that's it. Our goal is to get the property sold. And a lot of sellers, they make mistakes because sometimes they don't even allow you to do your job. You know, so the seller hires a realtor. Hire a realtor that you feel comfortable with, that you can, because there has to be a level of trust, okay? And just allow us to do our job. Because a lot of the times, a lot of realtors, and I'm speaking for myself and other realtors, they don't fully get a chance to do their job, because you will have other realtors that are very unethical. They probably will contact the seller during the time of your listing, and it creates a lot of confusion. So sellers have to get it through their mind that when you hire a realtor to sell your property, just work along with that realtor as a team to get the property sold.
Right. And that's a really, really great point, Emily. And I want to share a story. I was talking to a realtor the other day who said, you know, they had the seller said, "Oh, you're not showing my property." And they had 5 people, you know, 5 different opportunities that the person, you know, the agent called, was trying to show the property, and the seller didn't want to show it because the house, you know, may not have been as neat as they wanted it to be at the moment. But the fact is, the seller needs to make the house available for showing. You know, so when Emily says, you know, work with your realtor, you know, the house has to be available for showing when people want to see it. If you can put a lockbox or a super box where people can, here in South Jersey, we use super boxes, might be a little bit different in New York, to get into the property, you know, make it available. And it's a very safe process because that box tells us, one, when someone has entered the property, when they leave, who they are. You know, it gives us all of the information about the agent who's showing the property. And people make the appointments in advance, but it really lets us know that they went, you know, how long they were there. All of that information is there. And just, you know, making the house presentable is part of the seller's responsibility. And, you know, kind of doing the things that we request they do. Just making it available for showing. And that includes open houses so that people can see the property.
So there's a couple of things you two mentioned. So you mentioned maybe newspaper or some kind of advertising. You mentioned MLS and open houses. So those are 3 of the main ways of marketing a particular property.
The newspaper. We actually, you know, you have to sense the season that you're in. And newspaper ads, it's not really working. Most buyers are on the internet because they want to see, they want to see a color picture of the house. They want to see inside of the house. You know, we take pictures. There are some, you know, some virtual tours. You know, buyers are actually sitting on the computer looking at homes, okay? Mm-hmm. And they also come from other realtors. So the MLS is very, very important. And I would say to a seller, if you have a home in Brooklyn to be sold, you speak to the realtor and you find out, where would my house be listed? Is it going to be in Brooklyn or is it going to be in Long Island? Okay, because If your home is in Long Island listed and you have a home selling in Brooklyn, more than likely the Brooklyn agents are not going to have access to that home.
Oh, that's right. In New York, there is the MLS is broken up into different boroughs, correct? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So it's critical that they're situated in the right MLS geographically so that more people can present. Okay, gotcha. Very good. Very good. And also the website is now more popular than the newspaper type advertising. So that's critical, having a website and pictures and the virtual tours.
Okay. Exactly.
Yes.
Great. Anything else that the from the seller side or from the buyer side that you'd like to add in terms of what's being provided by agents? Because you said a lot of different things, and the process is very complex. And so I could see where someone, a layman, trying to navigate through these waters could get themselves in trouble very easily.
Well, there is one more thing that I'd like to mention, and it really is a matter of location. In New Jersey, depending on if you're in South Jersey or North Jersey, you may require the services of an attorney to do the contracts and to do the contracts. So in North Jersey, attorneys are required. In South Jersey, they're optional.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what the situation is in New York, Emily.
They are required.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're required on both sides.
The attorney prepares the contract, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. And from what I understand, this, if you go down south, you don't need an attorney. But New York State is definitely a state for attorneys, and as you said, North New Jersey as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, we talked a little bit about the title company. What's the role of the title company? So people get real clear about that. The
title company is to ensure what we call clear title. And that is there are no liens against the property. If there are liens, that those liens are cleared before settlement occurs. I'll give you an example. On a recent transaction that I did, the seller was an investment property. Got the property at a great price, went directly to the city to purchase the property, got it recorded, but did not get a title report. When I represented him as the seller in the transaction, when we went to sell the property and the title report came back, the previous owner had child support liens, and they liened the property. To make it even more interesting, the previous owner was deceased, so he was no longer around to be able to either clear the information or to pay the debts that were liened against the property, and the seller had to have an attorney come in to actually clear those debts, you know, to do the research. So it required more time and effort to have that occur. And because basically what the title company does in the transaction is to make sure that the current seller, and they go back, there's something called chain of title. They go back for a period of time to make sure not this seller nor the seller before nor the seller before that has any liens against the property. And probably the most, you know, the kind that comes up most often are IRS tax loans and child support. And people think, oh, you know, I didn't pay it, or it's out there, it doesn't affect them. If they own real estate, the government is going to get their money, and they will attach real property, and it doesn't become an issue until you try to sell the property. But it will be there, and you will have to you know, to deal with it at that point in time.
So the title is a very significant process in this whole, it ensures that the right of ownership gets properly recorded and transferred.
Correct.
Okay, is the International Black Summit Wealth Club, and this is Glenn Greenidge. Tonight we're hosting, I'm the host, and we're having residential real estate panelists, Emily James and Clara Lines Devon, and there, when we're having a conversation around residential real estate markets and what's possible. Yes, Emily, you were about to say something?
Yeah, what I wanted to say is that buyers are buyers, because I don't believe that buyers truly understand that they have choices. When I say they have choices, they can choose their mortgage person, they can choose their realtor, they can choose their title company, they can choose the inspector. It does not have to be tied into one group. Because okay, a lot of the times buyers don't understand that you have choices. You can choose who you want to give your business to.
Very good. So they may know people in the neighborhood or in their community that they can actually utilize to do the various functions. Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, they believe that, you know, if they buy the house for myself, they have to use everybody I recommend them to. No, they have choices. So buyers need to understand that they have choices.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. So let's change the emphasis just slightly, and I want to talk about markets and talk about, you know, what's available. So in this market, what would, if you were to name the particular market, what kind of market is this, the current market we're in? Is it a good market, bad market, buyer's market, seller's market? What kind of market is it?
I would say it's a buyer's market.
For the realistic seller, it's a good market. For the buyer, it's a buyer's market.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
A lot of sellers, they need to just, like, understand the season that we're in. You know, we know that prices went way out of line, and that's why we're in the position we are today. But if they're realistic, they can get their home sold, you know, and buyers, this is a great time to buy because, you know, they get good rates and they have a lot of options.
Okay. So there's a lot, the supply is high.
Supply is high.
Now, traditionally, the springtime is usually the selling of homes picks up. So there's a cyclical trend to in general, and that spring kind of starts that, and then it sort of ends when in the August, September time frame, something like that.
Right before Thanksgiving.
Okay, so this would be the spurring part. So if I were a seller now, I'd be looking to make sure that my house is ready to, you know, to capture this buyer's market coming up.
Yes.
Now let me ask you this. One of the things. And in fact, you talked a little bit about it, Emily. That sellers have to be realistic. What's the role of a real estate agent in pricing the house to sell?
The role of the realtor is to price the house comparable to the last three sales, and also to look at the market in terms of what's taking place. Because even if we look at the last three sales, we might have a decrease in price by 1 or 2%, depending on when that last sale took place. So the realtor's role is to do a proper CMA of the property so that they can advise the seller on what is the best price that they can price their home to get it sold.
And what's the CMA?
Comparable market analysis.
Okay. Very
mm-hmm.
good.
Mm-hmm.
So the part of the agent's job is to kind of take a look at the current, you know, trend to see where that house would fit into that particular trend and price it optimally.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. 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 Very good.
Right.
Now, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the key thing in that is comparable. So
okay.
a lot of times sellers, may look at, the house down the street or, around the corner sold for this and that, but maybe that home or sold for more money. Maybe that home had a pool and their home does not, or maybe that home had an extra bedroom and their home does not. So the key thing for sellers to understand is that a home is essentially like theirs in terms of bedrooms, baths, extra rooms like family rooms or basements or yard, or lot size or other amenities like pools, things in. And also in like neighborhood, because you can take the exact same home in one neighborhood, say it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath townhome, and, that same exact house in another city, township, or in another development in the same township could be a totally different price. And the taxes as well could be significantly different as well.
So the key word is comparable in that.
Comparable.
Yeah, because one of the things that I know, my Queens person isn't here, but I've got another caller. Hold on, caller 718-930. I'll get to you in a minute. One of the things that I know of is there are two sections of Queens. So one is Jamaica and one is Forest Hills. And the same house in Jamaica, Queens, is going for $500,000 or $600,000. You move that same property, same spec, same square footage, bedrooms, et cetera, to Forest Hills, and you're talking about $900,000 to $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
So you're absolutely right. It has to be in the same neighborhood in order to be able to compare, to do an exact comparable. Very good. What other kinds of things do the listeners need to understand when they're in the market?
In terms of we're talking about sellers now?
Well, either or. When we're talking about markets in general. So let's stay with the seller.
Okay. So, I guess the other thing that we look at is something called the absorption rate. And what the absorption rate is if there are, I'll take Cherry Hill as an example, if there are, 500 active homes for sale, and they are, all 3-bedroom, 2-bath homes, how long would it take for all of those homes to sell, given today, today as a static point in time? And
right.
And then I can figure out something called the absorption rate. So it might be, 2 months, it might be 3 months, it might be 6 months, it might be, in this market, 8 to 12 months.
Okay.
For that inventory to be depleted, and that is what I use to determine how long to take the listing for, because
gotcha.
it's not worth it to do to take a 3-month listing when an absorption rate is 8 to 12 months. If you're going to spend the money and the marketing time, you don't want to do all the marketing, just to turn over the listing after 3 months when it might take some time for the property to sell. And so what the seller needs to understand is, this is kind of the time frame that you could expect for the house to be on the market before sale occurs, given the current
industry. In a case like that, would you, if I was a seller and I came to you and I said, I want a quick sale or a quicker sale, would
I'd say
I
lower
have the price?
Lower your price. Right.
Okay.
Lower your price.
Okay. Okay.
You want a quick sale, lower your price.
The price got to go down. There's nothing quick about it. If you have it priced out of the market, Right. It's not going to sell.
Right.
You lower the price. I mean, we can work together. I can get you the quick sale.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay. The other thing is, let's say, for example, what would be a short-term trend that you have noticed in Brooklyn and New Jersey and maybe overall in residential real estate? What kinds of what do you see this happening short-term? Are prices going up or staying the same, going down? What are the trends that you've seen?
You want to talk about New York, Emily?
Yeah, denial. I'm known to be a listing agent. You know, go out there and get listing. You know, you list to last. But
sure.
Now, you know, the listings, it's like it's so difficult because just to get the seller to understand that the market that we are in, you know, the sellers are actually a regular seller is competing with pre-foreclosures, you know, short sales, and they're competing with foreclosures.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
So you can have the same house on the same block. One is being done as a short sale, and you have a regular price. The one that's going to be being done as a short sale is going to be sold before yours. So at least try to price it that way. I mean, you're not going to price it to the short sale price, but price it in a way that when the person looks at that home, they could also look at your home, you know, because you could actually price yourself out of the market. And the agents are still taking listings that they're pricing the houses out of the market. And I don't know why, you know, why someone would want to do that, because you would just end up with a house that would not sell. You would spend your marketing dollars, and you're not going to get paid.
So it really behooves both the seller and the agent to really have a good idea of the pricing in this market because supply is so high.
That's it. Supply is very
okay.
High, so you have to be realistic on your pricing. And, you know, the sellers, if you go to a doctor and the doctor says to you, you know, you have a toe that's causing problem, I need to cut it off, you would take the advice of your doctor. So it's the same
right.
thing as a realtor. We're the doctors to real estate. If
yes.
we say to you, this is what the market is saying, this is where your house is supposed to be priced, because sellers also have to realize there's something called an appraisal. Okay, so if we price the house low, you would know that we encourage you to give away your house.
Right.
Okay,
right,
when
right.
We price a house based on this comparable sales, you know, within a certain radius, you know, and that's what we determine that your house should be sold for. You know, so you have to trust our judgment, too. And also for realtors also have to do the right thing by educating the sellers on what is the right price and not just pricing the home to get the listed, because, you know, it doesn't make sense. It's not going to work on either side if you go about it the wrong way.
So in this market, the smart agents are pricing it right. Because if they don't, the house is not going to sell, and they're going to waste their time as well as the seller's time.
Yeah, we're not going to get paid. You're going to also waste your money.
Right.
And Emily made a really, really good point, which is the proximity of the home to homes that are in short sale or foreclosure. And that's a kind of a key theme that is going on in this particular market. I guess I just want to take a minute and explain the difference between the short sale and the foreclosure. So the short sale is when either the list price is less than or the bank is taking less than what is owed on the property. And it could be because the values have dropped, you know, in that particular neighborhood, or it may be because the seller, you know, needs to go and they're trying to reduce the property to, you know, to not go into a foreclosure situation. A foreclosure situation is they're actually behind in their mortgage payments, and if they're pre-foreclosure, they're just behind. In foreclosure, the bank is actually, you know, owns the property at that point in time. So if you put a home that, you know, is not distressed in any way, and you have one across the street or down the street that's short sale or foreclosure, it's going to impact, unfortunately, the price of the home. That's not if it's an area where there aren't those issues close by or in close proximity, then that home would be priced a little bit, differently, or, would have, you would look at it a little bit differently in terms of the pricing.
Well, let me ask you this, Clara. For Southern New Jersey, is foreclosure and short sales, are there a lot of them happening in that area?
In Cherry Hill specifically, they're not a lot.
Okay.
We are starting to get some short sales. We're not have, there are some foreclosures, but the percentage, based on overall sales is not as high. In South Jersey as a whole, we are seeing more short sales in different, price ranges, and also they're always foreclosures. They're always have been there. They always exist. Has the number increased, based on past statistics? Yes.
Okay.
But it's, for South Jersey as a whole, it's actually a pretty stable community, which is why a lot of people like to come to South Jersey. The prices are reasonable. You get a lot of home for your house, a lot of house for your, for your money.
Yeah.
Depending on where you are in the region, the taxes can be really high or reasonable. But it's overall, though, the communities are pretty stable.
Gotcha. Emily, what would you say about the foreclosures and short sales in Brooklyn or New York City in general?
There's a lot of short sales taking place for the fact that sellers are having the opportunity to release the properties at a lesser price and save their credit.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of most times when we go in and take a listing,
yeah,
it starts off as a regular listing, but 9 times out of 10, that seller, if they purchased that home within the last 2 years, is about to fall behind or has already fell behind in one payment.
Okay.
Short sales is actually to protect their credit, because the banks are allowing them to do the short sales if it's their primary residence. They're allowing them to do the short sales and be able to save their credit. So that's, we have a lot of short sales, and most of my listings, they're right there. They're heading to that.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I know about Jamaica or Southeast Queens has got the highest foreclosure rate in New York City. And so we've been experiencing a lot of foreclosures, lots of short sales in a small area. And, of course, what that does is, as you both ladies have said, drives down the price, so that when the supply is overstimulated, then the price comes down because there's not a lot of demand for it in this particular market. What would you say is the long term look? Maybe a year out, 2 years out. What do we have to look forward to? Do we have something to look forward to? Emily, start off with you.
What I'm actually encouraging buyers to do, that buyers that come around me, I'm encouraging them to buy as families. I think we need to go back to basics,
mm-hmm,
where, long ago a family would purchase a home together, and
okay,
each person makes a contribution in order that, we can get ahead. I think within the last couple of years, we kind of extended our, and everybody's dream, at least in Brooklyn, it's a two-family home, a 3/2, a finished basement, semi-detached, private drive. buyers need to be realistic and understand the process, because you cannot buy a home depending on the tenant to pay your mortgage. When you buy a home, you buy a home because you can afford your mortgage.
Right.
Whatever it takes. In terms of, family, I would encourage buyers to, look look at the people around you, your family members, and try to buy as a family. You buy as a family, more than likely able to hold on to what you purchase, versus if you try to do things independently and depend on an outsider to come and pay your rent.
Good. Very good. Very good. So back to basics. And I've been hearing that in a lot of investment conversations. You know, go back to the fundamentals. Go back to the basics. Okay. Very good. Very good. What about you, Clara?
I guess in the future would be buying for the long haul. I think part of the reason we're seeing a lot of what we're seeing now is because, you know, as Emily said, 2 years ago or 5 years ago, people got into what I term short-term mortgage products, where their interest rate was a certain thing for, you know, 2 to 5 years. And after that five-year period, it adjusted. And those products were really meant for people who were going to stay in the property 5 years and then, you know, move up either to the next property or stabilize the loan, you know, at the end of the five-year period, which would be to refinance it, to whatever the current market interest rate. And I think people overextended themselves where they pulled out their equity prior to that time frame and used it. And then they weren't able to stick with the plan. So I think in the future, people have learned their lesson, and they're going to, you know, purchase for the longer term and really use vehicles. In fact, people are going to be forced to use vehicles that are not so flexible. Yeah, not so flexible because, you know, lenders are not in the position, as we know, to take the type of risk that we've taken in the past. And so, you know, it's going to be a more stable market, and people, I think, are going to stay in their properties for longer periods of time before either moving around or even changing their loan products.
Okay, okay. Now, what would you say in the Brooklyn and the southern New Jersey markets specifically, are there more people buying for their family, or are they buying as investments? Emily?
Family. I'm seeing more family.
You're seeing more family. Okay.
Yeah, because people they're kind of afraid of the investment now. Because, I mean, if you go downtown Brooklyn, landlord-tenant court, you know, just going alone will tell you, you know, just buy for your family what you can afford, and that's it. Once you know you can pay your mortgage, that's the most important thing. Don't depend on the tenant to pay your mortgage, because this is how a lot of people lost their homes also, through tenants.
Okay, right. But depending on the tenants to pay, and the tenants don't pay, and then they've now gotten behind on their mortgage. Gotcha.
That's okay. It, yeah.
What about you, Clara? What have you seen?
Oh, I would agree. Yeah, the majority of the people purchasing are families. And also we're seeing an influx of first-time homebuyers. I think the tax credit provisions that are being offered are really exciting people and drawing them into this market. So we're seeing a lot of first-time homebuyers.
Gotcha. So that's interesting. So in this market, you see a lot of first-time homebuyers and mm-hmm. families that are looking for properties. What would you what areas would you suggest in Brooklyn, Emily, that are hot, or New York City as well? Because I know that you do a lot in Brooklyn, but you're not restricted to Brooklyn. So what would be some hot areas that you would recommend to people?
Well, you know that is a very, Clara, would you agree? That's a very difficult question he just asked me.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you want to be is where I can take you, I can get you there, because in terms of Brooklyn and the demographics and the diversity, I would encourage buyers to do their research, because that's not my job to research an area. And wherever you would like a home, I can get you a home in that area. That's it. But I cannot say, well, this area versus this area is better. No, you know, well, you're kind of going to shop with, you know, the money that you have. I mean, if you have $2 million, I mean, I can take you to Park Slope.
Right.
If you have $400,000, I can say, well, okay, maybe East Flatbush, can I see, I can find you something. So it all depends on what you're qualified for and the money that you have that you willing to put out the initial investment of your down payment and your closing costs and stuff like that.
So it really has to do with your objectives. So what are the objectives of the buyer, and then you're fitting those objectives into what's available and then directing them that way.
Right.
Yep.
And no, I think every home purchase is a good investment. You know, if you've got a good stable mortgage, if you've been qualified for amount that is not more than, I would say, 40 to 42% of your total income, because you want to have money left over to pay your, you know, living expenses and have a life.
Your debt to income ratio, sure. Yes.
Right, that whole debt to income ratio thing. If you're within all of those parameters, then the home is a really good investment, because one of the other things that, you know, I go over in the consultation process, if you purchase a home today, even in, you know, with the market, with prices having lowered, if you purchased that same home 10 years ago, the property has appreciated in value, you know, whether it's, you know, $2,000 or $30,000 to $50,000 or more, depending on, you know, the neighborhood. A home still is a good investment. Real estate still appreciates. The trend is still upward over the years, even though we've had, you know, a few dips. It's still a good investment. And if you take the same money and put it in, you know, say your job and say, oh, I'm going to get a raise, because people tell me, oh, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait until, you know, I make more money. It's better to buy what you can afford now. And I call it the stair step. The same property that you wanted to buy this year, in most instances, is going to be worth more money, or it's going to cost you more money in the years down the road, and you may not be able to afford it. Whereas if you had purchased the home, you know, even with your tax refund, if you took your tax refund money and just started saving it or investing it in something else, it's just, real estate overall is a good investment. So I agree with Emily, buy where you can afford to purchase and, you know, where you're comfortable, and buy now.
Okay. Let me ask the reverse part of that. Are there any parts or markets that you would tell people to avoid? Emily?
Again, that's a question we cannot answer.
Okay.
By our code,
I figured I'd ask.
By our code, we cannot. But what I could encourage buyers to do, if you see a house that you may be interested in a particular location,
uh-huh,
do the research. Do the research. You know, go by there 12 o'clock in the night. Go by there 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know?
True.
And you observe for yourself. You know, you observe, you know, check the schools out. You know, because if you have school-age children, more than likely they'll be going to school in that area if they're going to be doing the public school system. So you have to do a little bit of research also, you know.
Okay.
But I can't say there's a good area and a bad area. I can't. I'm you know, by my code, I cannot.
So it's really on the customer or the buyer to come in and to have done some basic research in terms of the areas that they're interested in, and at that point in time, you can now support them in their choice.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. I've got about a minute left here. Would you, ladies, please let the listeners know what number that they can reach you at and or email, Emily?
Okay. I can be reached at 718-485-2222. My email is Emily, D as in David, James, @AOL.com.
Great, thank you. Clara?
My phone number is 856-264-1058. That's 1058. And my email address is claralyons@wyker.com. That's claralyons@weichert.com.
Well, I'd like to just thank you so much for coming on the Wealth Club and to letting our listeners know what's the value of a realtor, you know, what's happening in the residential market, and some of the pitfalls that they can avoid and some of the things that they need to be aware of when they're in the buying process. Once again, that was Emily James from RE/MAX and Clara Lines from Wyker. Emily is located in the Brooklyn area, and Clara is in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Once again, thank you so much for being part of my show. I'm sure that the listeners have gotten a lot of great information, and again, thank you.
Thank you, Glenn.
For having us, Glenn. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. This is the International Black Summit. This is the Wealth Club, and we're going to be now moving into the third segment. We've got with us today, all the way from Chicago, Illinois, we've got Lenar Bragg, who is going to be letting us know a little bit about For the Love of Money. Lenar, are you there?
Yes, I am, Glenn. Thank you for having me here tonight.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome, and I learned a lot in the past hour from Clara and Emily. Kudos to you ladies, very knowledgeable about their subject matter, you know, stuck within the guidelines of what they can and cannot say as realtors. That was wonderful, really.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
That was great. Yes, good. Good, I'm glad. So tell us a little bit about yourself and about this teleseminar that's coming up.
Okay, well, as you know, Glenn, we've known one another, you and I, through the International Black Summit since 1992. So
yes.
we both facilitators in that body of, I'm going to say, August people.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, I'm a host of a Blog Talk radio show, Know Out There. It airs Wednesday nights. Right here on Blog Talk Radio at 8 p.m. Central. And
tell people a little bit about what the flavor of that is as well.
Know Out There?
Yes.
It's a concept that, you know, I've been living my life out of really on purpose for surely the last 12, 13 years. Although it's something I've known about since I was 19 because I had severe anger issues and wasn't willing to have that run my life. So pretty much what Know Out There says, that nobody's doing it to me, nobody's stabbing me in the back, and nobody's to blame for what's going on in my life. I'm 100% accountable and responsible for what's here. And, you know, Know Out There, there's nothing out there without me, the observer. And quantum physics, quantum mechanics is backing that up, you know, up one side, down the other now. So that's, you know, pretty much it, and I'd like to add on that. So whenever I have an upset in my life, you know, I know it's because there's something I didn't say that I feel I should have said, something I didn't do that I feel I should have done, something I didn't get that I, you know, feel I should have gotten, or something I wanted to contribute and, you know, my contribution wasn't accepted. So it's still all about me.
Gotcha.
That's pretty much it. It's all over here with me. It all rests with me. And, you know, people from The Secret, Joe Vitale, Jack Canfield, John Assaraf, and those folks from What the Bleep, you know, Dr. Fred Allen Wolf, and many of those are saying the same thing that I'm saying, James Arthur Ray. We're just saying it in different ways.
Gotcha. Very good. Very good. Just want to let the listener, 513-459, we're going to get to you in a little bit. Again, this is Lenar Bragg. We're talking about Know Out There, and so we're actually going to now shift the conversation and tweak it a little bit and talk specifically about For the Love of Money.
Which is really a no out there conversation.
It is.
Yeah, it truly, truly is. And here's, I want to just go back a bit, because while participating with the International Black Summit, you know, it's been a dream of mine since I was very young to be in the spiritual metaphysical arena. You know, when I was younger, I went to Catholic school, so of course I wanted to be a nun, right? Well, some things happen. You know, couldn't be a priest, and, you know, so of course I rebelled about that. Like, oh, heck
yes,
no. If I can't be at the top, So at any rate, but that still did not dampen my enthusiasm and interest in it. And there were things that happened to me as a child, you know, dreams and seeing things and dreams that came true, let me just say that, and other things and just kind of intuitive. And then this other thing happened to me, my hearing. You know, I have, by any medical standards, I hear below normal in both ears, and the left ear is severely, you know, more damage than the right. So having that kind of forced me to learn to listen differently. I had to listen with other parts of me. And so I tend to not take anything for granted. I question a lot of things. And one of the things I questioned was, okay, I'm doing well over here in this arena. Like when I left school, became a computer programmer, you know, the raises, and even how I became a computer programmer is a story all in itself. And so, I, you know, my thinking is either this stuff works or it doesn't, right? Either what they say works or it doesn't. And Jesus has said in the Bible, you know, these things and more, you know, shall you do. So, hey, I took Jesus at his word. And I also took spirituality and metaphysics at its word. You know, change your thinking, change your life, and all of that. Well, and through my, throughout my life, I would just say, okay, I want to do this or I want to have this thing. And, you know, it would happen pretty much. You know, some of my friends had to point it out to me. Hey, you know, you said you were going to do that like a month ago or a couple of weeks ago, and you're doing that. And I would be totally not present to it. Until they brought it up. And I was like, oh, yeah, I did say that, didn't I? So, you know, things were going along like that in my life, and all of a sudden I decide I want to leave corporate America, you know, do what I love because the money will follow, right? And
Been there, done that.
Right? And, yeah, not so much, you know.
Right.
And yet I have to say I've not had any of those life-altering been on the street type of thing. I'm kind of like middle of the road. I'm like, I'm not up for that. I'm not going there. I'm not doing that. Not resistance, just clear. The line is in the sand here. Cross it if you think you want to do that.
Right.
You don't want
to
do that with me. So anyway, been in the conversation. And I, so I went to the workshops, right? I did my praying, my meditating, my affirming, read the books, listen to the tapes, watch the videos, and I have to say there was some movement. Things work, you know. And Glenn, you're a computer programmer, right? You and I. We know one another through that. And the one thing I know about computer programmer is we like to put things on automatic. We do not want to have to do it over and over. If it's
any
an open
kind of repetitive task,
we're gonna
figure out a process, procedure, or something to do to make it easy.
Exactly, automate it. And so, truthfully, that's what I have been like looking for. Not necessarily the magic pill. I'm willing to put in the work. I've done the 60-day abundance healing program. Say this thing for 30 days. Do this for 21 days. So it's not like I'm not willing to do the work, because I clearly am willing to do work. It's just at some point that in my world, that's supposed to kick in. Like I remember, you know, to turn the light off before I go to bed. I remember to brush my teeth and call, you know. So why should this be any different? And that's another thing about being a computer programmer. I was pretty logical before I got in that and got, you know, even more so afterwards. So I'm looking and taking notes and writing down the things that work. And then last year I heard Dr. Hugh Lynn say this about money. He said, money is like Mother Earth, and we abuse it. He actually said money is like women and Mother Earth, and, you know, if you abuse a woman, what's she going to do?
She's going to, something bad is going to happen to you.
Are you thinking of Mr. Green there, or whatever his name was? Al Green and the Grits.
Al Grits Green? when you look at how we're taking care of the planet and how we're polluting the planet, and the planet is responding by global warming.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now adjusting. Now, clearly, I don't know if that adjustment is good or bad, but it's carrying us to a different extreme. And so the thing is as you said, take care of Earth.
Right.
And the best shall happen for you. So
exactly. And, you know, to put it simply, and I'm not saying Mother Earth is going to do this, but, you know, if you abuse a woman long enough, she's going to leave you, some sooner than others. You know,
true.
It just depends. I just want to say I don't know if Mother Earth has taken us to another extreme. I would like to say Mother Earth is, assisting in our evolution, having us
Absolutely.
Be more conscious, which
gotcha.
I think is
gotcha.
A great thing. And so is what's going on in the global economy. And to your point, when I look at the global economy, what I see is a lot of fear.
A lot of fear.
And all the other things that go along with that, scarcity, lack, greed, even in the space of fear, there's, you know, greed, neediness, all of that. And
mm-hmm.
The feeling about that feels to me like pain. I don't know about you, but it feels like pain.
Pain, sure.
So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I can get that. Yeah.
So here's the thing. So in my study, so when Dr. Hugh Lynn said that, he also gave the way out of it. He said, you know, well, what you want to do is get friendly with your money. And I was like, oh, hey, get friendly with your money. Get friendly with your money. And I'm thinking, he said, you know, so say the Ho'oponopono, which is please forgive me, thank you, I love you, I appreciate you, I'm sorry. So, you know, I'm doing that, and, you know, like I said, things work,
mm-hmm.
not like they
mm-hmm.
don't. And yet that nagging thing, my computer black box said, something, come on, keep looking.
There's something else out there.
Yeah, or in here.
Or in here.
Right.
Even better.
So,
yeah.
I'm still in that, you know, a woman. That if you don't want a woman to leave, that's where my brain went, then what would you do? And I was like, hey, I can answer this. I'm a woman. I can say
right.
what would have me stick around. Treat me nice, treat me well, wine and dine me, compliment me. I really like to laugh, you know, have fun with me. Yes. You know, tell me the
take
truth.
Take care of that woman. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Tell me the truth, except about how I look. Don't tell me I look fat in those jeans, you know, that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
And maybe
Absolutely.
Some people are sensitive about their cooking. I'm not. You can tell me I can't cook. That means we just get to go out. Or you cook.
I hear you.
So,
right.
So I'm looking in that realm. Okay. So all of those things. And then I'm like, something I felt I was getting closer. And then all of a sudden it hit me. This thought came to me. It said, how would it be if you treated your money like a new lover?
Whew.
And I said,
okay.
That's it. That is the space of it. That is the space of love is blind.
Okay.
That, and that's a feeling place. And so
yeah.
I kept saying that. That's the feeling of it. And, you know, Abraham Hicks and somebody else says, you know, you have to get to the feeling place of it. Because once you get to the feeling place of a thing, it can't help but come to you because you've now become a magnet for it. And you don't have
yeah.
to struggle
okay.
and effort.
Okay. So just like a new love will come to you.
Hey.
Because you're putting it, you're giving it attention, you're giving it the care, you want it to come back. So
absolutely.
you're nurturing and taking care of it and
yes.
stimulating that kind of response.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And then here's what else happened. Once I got on that train of thought,
mm-hmm.
what began to happen? Jill Boatty Taylor, by the way, you know the stroke of insight doctor who had the
okay.
stroke? She was a brain scientist, and she had the stroke, and she was able to understand exactly what was going on in her brain as it was happening to her.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Yes.
Because she was the one that called on the phone, that was able to call 911 as she was experiencing the process. Yes.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yes. And by the way, she's going to be on my show in May, the end of
excellent.
May 27th. So what she says in the very beginning of her book on page 19, she says, although many of us may think of ourselves as thinking creatures that feel, listen to this. Biologically, we are feeling creatures that think.
That think. So say that again. Say that again so that our listeners can really get that, because this is very, very important.
It is. This is the crux of for the love of money. You want me to repeat the whole sentence?
Yes, please.
Okay. It says, although many of us may think of ourselves as thinking creatures that feel. Biologically, we are feeling creatures that think.
Wow.
And as a brain scientist, she should know.
Yeah.
So what my mind, my logical mind, told me is that this goes along with the law of attraction and all of that, that what precedes us, and we know this, how many times have we been told that communication is 80% nonverbal?
Yeah.
80 to 90%. So what precedes us is our energy. So if you bring in that fear and lack and scarcity and neediness towards money, what is money going to do?
Oh, my goodness, yeah, yeah.
It's going to run the heck away, and the faster the better.
Run real fast. Run
exactly.
Real fast. Yeah.
Get
yeah.
wings. Shoot, it might even fly. Then,
wow.
yeah. So, so that was to me confirmation. Hey, you're on the right track here. You got all the pieces. You put that in
mm-hmm.
about the treating your money like a new lover. And you have something there. Furthermore, I was reminded, because there was a little more to her statement,
okay,
which linked up to Tony Robbins. And I was like, oh, my goodness. This is what she said. By the time a message reaches our cerebral cortex for higher thinking, we have already placed a feeling upon how we view that stimulation, i.e. money. Is this pain or is this pleasure?
Ooh, wow. Wow.
And what did Tony Robbins say? Tony Robbins said back in the 80s, the truth is that we can learn to condition our minds, bodies, and emotions to link pain or pleasure to whatever we choose.
To whatever we choose, pain or pleasure, huh?
Yes. And by changing what we link pain and pleasure to, we will instantly change our behaviors. So what the Love of Money telewebcast is about, it is about unhooking money from pain and linking it with pleasure.
Pleasure. Oh, my goodness. So it's really getting that access. So now you're drawing it to you rather than pushing
repelling it. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And
excellent.
We're going to
excellent.
Do that by looking at money as if it is a new lover.
I love that imagery and that analogy. That's a great analogy, because there's something about a new lover that is very passionate, that is very exciting. The newness is exciting, it's passionate. We're driven by it. And when I look for myself, I'm not that about my money.
Good. And how many people are, that, do you think?
I don't know.
Exactly. I don't know either. But here's a clue. Globally, take a look.
Yeah, yeah. Because most people, what's the number one cause of divorce is money. You know,
we know really that it's not about the money. We know that. That's a symptom of it.
Okay.
And I do say that it's not about the money. It's never about the money.
Neither is
the telewebcast. And yet, it will provide access to.
But there is something about the feeling.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And you're gonna hear. I suspect because they're beginning to be several feeling things showing up in the spiritual metaphysical marketplace, if you will.
Okay. Okay.
And the brain scientist, she's told us we are feeling creatures that think. And how much, you know, I've been to all the, you know, all the big name people. I could throw out the names. You've been to some. Shall I mention, I'll say Millionaire Mind, I don't have to mention the name. I'll say Quantum Wealth, I don't have to mention the name of the person. You know, Think and Grow Rich. All of the, you know, although those do talk about emotions and feelings or vibration,
yeah.
But most of that stuff is taken out of there. If you buy that stuff lately, that stuff isn't in there. But in some of the original work, in some of the original work, you have to go to the old books, old school.
Okay.
So, you're going to see that more and more because that's the juice. The energy of it precedes us. The energy is paving the way. It's making the road that we are then traveling upon because it's our energy.
Gotcha. Oh, boy, I love this. This is exciting. This is very, very exciting. So the feelings.
Yes.
Access.
Got to get to the feeling place of it. And there's, you know, there's some little work to do. It's not just like, you know, I go through, which I do, you know, that whole thing, you know, how would it be if you treated your money like a new lover? How would it be if you made space for it in your closet? How would it be if you cleaned out a drawer for it? How would it be if you made a key for it and then invited it to move in? How would it be?
Wow.
And I take that, you know, visual. I do a lot more with it. Well, one of the things I know, there's some language parts of it, you know, to upgrade the language. When you have a new lover, you try to find out everything you can. What are their likes? What are the dislikes? Because you don't want to, you know, mess it up.
Right. You want to cultivate it.
Right. So there are some things I suggest that people don't even know about their money. I have this little exercise. I used to teach it to my fifth graders. It's called Who's on Front and What's on Back.
Okay. And that's one of the exercises that will be part of the teleseminar?
Actually, yes. It's. I really encourage folks to do that prior to coming, you know, prior to attending. Because, you know, we can visually see this person and we notice, you know, breasts, behind, you know, we notice their build first, color of their eyes, hair, shape. You know, we have all that sensory stuff, how it smells. And I wonder how many people have done that with their money.
I know I have not.
Yeah. Like, really check it out. You check out your woman or a potential woman.
From head to toe.
Hey, that's what I'm speaking
of.
If I were to ask you.
Clothes,
which,
her shoes.
Yes, exactly. If I were to ask you, which one of our coins has ridges on the side, could you tell me?
quarter.
Very good. So you have checked it out. There's another one.
The Dime.
Yes. All right. So, see, you know something.
Interesting. Okay. So, but it's, yeah. But it's a, yeah. Yes, and the, of course, there's more to go. That's just the, that's just the beginning. Now, we've got about 4 minutes left, so I want to make sure that you, we get everything in
yes.
for our listeners.
Because I have a special opportunity.
Okay. Okay.
So the workshop is Thursday, this Thursday, March 26th.
March 26th.
Right. At 8 p.m. Central. That's 9 Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, 6 Pacific. And you have to register. If you go to my website, www.knowoutthere.com,
mm-hmm.
there is a link. There are several links. There's a link down on the front page, right down towards the bottom. If you already know you want to register, you can just go there and click that button.
Okay.
If you're not sure and you'd like more information, you click the link on the side. It will take you to a page that's got more information, again, with links, so you can register.
Okay.
And for any one of your Growing Wealth listeners
okay.
who, you know, hears something in this for themselves and registers within 24 hours,
okay.
you get 50% off of the already
wow.
low
wow.
low price.
Listeners, you guys hear
low
that?
Cost.
50% off.
Right.
Within and but you have to do this within 24 hours.
Right, because it's already set up when it says the time is up, the time is up.
Okay.
It's set up for Growing Wealth. You have to, when you go to register, enter the code GW, capital G, capital W for Growing Wealth. That way
okay.
I know it came from your show, Glenn.
Okay, very good. Excellent, excellent, excellent. And what, and the second date is April?
April 2nd, yes. Thank you. It's a two-session, 90-minute telewebcast. It's you can access through telephone or through the website.
Okay.
Or both, because on the website I will also have a slide, you know, presentation to go along with the handout.
Oh, so you could okay, so you can listen to it and have the
and
web
observe,
interaction.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Very good. And
well,
that's
the
also
handout
started
is
at the same time on April 2nd?
Yes, the
so
same time,
nights.
April 2nd. It's one, both sessions are included in that price.
Okay. And give us the price again?
I didn't.
Ah.
Yeah, I
okay.
didn't. That's go to the okay. website.
Go to the website, okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm learning how to do this.
Very good, very good. So, and give us the website again.
Go to www.knowoutthere.com. That's knowoutthere.com.
Excellent, excellent. And is there any other means of communication that, that my listeners can communicate with you?
Well, of course, they can email me at knowoutthere, which is N-O-T, at knowoutthere.com. That will come to me also.
Okay. N-O-T at knowoutthere.com. Okay,
right.
Very good. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, this is very, very exciting information that you've got. I love this new lover, treat my money like new lover.
Yes.
You know, it's exciting. It's kind of energetic. When I think about it, it's very stimulating, and you know, it's like, wow, why wouldn't I want to stimulate my money?
Exactly.
You know? You know, it's like a huge aha for me, you know, to stimulate, to nurture it, to stroke it, to, you know, whatever. Oh, this is so great. This is so great, Lenar.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it. Anything else that you would like to just say? We've got about a little over 30 seconds left.
Only that, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, when you see the iceberg, that's just 10%. There's 90% underneath. So I'm thinking about all the other points. My mind is going, hey, you didn't tell them about the secret of secrets or the two switch words or the two things that, you know, can help you in any financial situation, just doing these two things. Usually they tell you one, you need both of them together. about being impressed with yourself, you know, and why that's so important, and, you know, what I mean by that. So it's, like I said, what I've shared tonight is about the tip of the iceberg.
So go to the website, knowoutthere.com, for the love of money. Love you all. We've just ended the streaming. Thank you, Lenar.
You're welcome, Glenn.
It's
thank you for having
me
pleasure.
Here. Yes. You're very welcome.
I've enjoyed it. Great show. You have a great show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
and you're
thank
a great
you
interviewer.
Much. Thank you very much, my dear. You have a lovely and much, much success.
Thank
and
you.
I'm going to let folks know about this because I'm excited about it myself.
All right.
All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank
okay.
you, Glenn.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.